Hello, nurse. Those are the days, right? The nurse days. So, welcome to Streaming Consciousness. I am the consciousness which streams. It's been a while. I feel like I start most podcasts by saying it has been a while, because it usually has. I do actually have a couple of casts that I have not published. They need editing and things like that, because I got super, super, there's one I got really, really vulnerable. I'm still not sure about health and stuff. People are always telling me that I should talk about my health, that I should write a book about my health journey. And I really don't want to do that. But for whatever reason, I decided at some point last month to speak about my health journey, or some portion of it. I know I'm a little echoey, and I am sorry for that. I am still having technical difficulties. I'm pretty sure it's probably tied to the update that my computer wants to do that I'm postponing till this is done. So I am here today. I feel like I'm filled with joy. I am filled. Can I talk to you about the joy with which I am filled? You guys have been with me the past few years. It's been a little rough. And so whenever you heard from me, I was on some deep existential, angsty emo. And I am here for all of the angst and the emo-ness. Do not get me wrong. But I have to explain to you that I don't like being unhappy. Like, I really don't like it, like, at all. I like being content, I like being happy, and I like being joyful. Anything below content, and I'm going to start doing things. And for me, most of my life, whenever I have felt, because I do have like depression tendencies, they're not very big. I mean, like, it's more of mood kind of thing. Something's going wrong or whatever. But I've always been able to find my happy spot. I've always been able to find, like, even, you know, with the exception of those times when the brain chemistry just wasn't willing to work with me, I have always been able to find my content, right? My joy. And my contentment has always been like within touching distance of my joy. So, like, I might be just feeling sort of chill and content right now, but if I think for a moment, I can be filled with joy because of, I don't know, the kitty cat is doing something extra cute, which one of them is doing something extra weird. So I have them on opposite ends of the kitchen and one of them on a shelf. That's where their feeding stations are, because one feels the need to eat the other one's food and the other one is just kind of a wuss and will let her. So they are on opposite ends of the kitchen. Now the one who eats the food I placed on the shelf, right? And we do this whole bit. I know this is so interesting to you, my cat, but they are my babies. So listen. So we do this whole bit where I bring food to the little one first because she was here first and I wanted to help boost her, you know, self-esteem and also sort of signal to the other one, we have to play nice. So that's always been the pattern. And generally what the big one will try to do is start eating her food. But we kind of instead, you know, we have our own little system. I put down her dish, I say to the big one, hop, and she scampers into the kitchen and hops up onto her shelf and waits for me to give her her food. Because she knows, like, if when I say hop, she don't go running, I'm likely to get busy like washing dishes or something like that. So she'll have to wait a minute. And she's really good about it. So, but lately, she's been wanting me to pick her up and put her on the shelf. Something has happened. Either she jumped up and found something unexpected there or didn't make the jump or something, but she's a little skittish about the jump these days. So I have to figure out what that's about. So yeah, touching distance of my happiness. I am right now in touching distance of my joy, one of my joys, which is my pets. So I don't need a lot to be joyful, but I do need to be happy. I need to, that's just who I am. And if I ain't got my happy, I'm going to go find it. So, and I'm reasonable. I'm not like I think only like children and those who are no longer with us mentally, as far as like if you have dementia and if you're a child, it is possible to be happy all the time. Possible. Not likely, but still possible because you don't know what's going on. Happiness is about, for me, it's about self-respect. It's about valuing. It's about valuing others. It's about helping other people. And I don't mean that in the sense of I'm happiest that I help people in order to make myself happy, or that I count myself as a good person and so then I'm happy. It is just that human beings, we need to feel useful. And if I can feel useful sometimes, that adds to my happiness. There are just little pieces, it's like confetti, all the things in my life that make for a happy me. The past 2 years have been rough. Rough. And actually, it's kind of nice to be doing this now because it is literally like 2 days from the second anniversary of the breakup. So the past couple of years have been rough. I did this thing to myself where we spoke again for a little bit, for like a couple of weeks. We tried to be friends. And then he turned tail and ran again. And I was starting a new interaction with someone else. And also, he was back. And I was struggling health-wise. It was just a big stew for making things messy. And unfortunately, I was also trying to start my business. So I was like, I was in such early stages, like I wasn't even sure if I knew how to do what I thought I was doing. And what happened was that I just cracked open for my life, my entire life. I have wanted to be a partner, wanted to have someone who's on my side, whose side I am on, and no matter what, we know that about each other. And I looked at my parents' marriage, long though it lasted, it was horrific. And I had like, you know, because the faith, my faith, you know, there's a lot of information about family and how to do family happily and all that. And I absorbed all of that. I absorbed books about like making myself mentally healthy because I knew that I was growing up in a mentally unhealthy situation. So I started work. I think my mom gave me my first book on psychology, which is hilarious to me. Codependent No More. She gave that to me. But actually, no, she didn't give it to me. No, first book on psychology that I read was The Family Crucible. And I never stopped reading it after. I never stopped reading about psychology ever since then. I read it at age 10 or 11. I had read The Crucible by Arthur Miller and on accident, because, you know, we just had all these books in our house. And I was just like reading, like I was just scarfing down anything that had words. Like, I couldn't sit down to eat even without something in front of me to read, even if it was just a cereal box. I read a lot of ingredients. I learned how to say riboflavin at a very young age. So books. So I read The Crucible by Arthur Miller. Cannot remember why I picked it up. It looked funny, like the way it was written, and it looked short. And so I read it and I loved it. Oh my goodness. Oh, it just opened my entire brain and cracked it. Like, and I was never the same after that. It was one of those things that was life changing. The idea of putting my words, putting someone else's words in my mouth and using them to express my feelings, big. But I had not yet arrived at that yet, because I still kind of thought that I didn't know that actors were a thing yet quite. I still kind of thought that I did not yet know that Luke Skywalker and Han Solo were the same person. So that realization was a little while off. So but I loved the story, and I loved like the way, but of course the way plays are written, they kind of like make you feel like, oh, so there's a person's name and that's what they say. What happens if I say it? So that's what happened. Loved The Crucible. Loved it, loved it, loved it. Found this book called The Family Crucible. I thought, sequel, cool. So I read that. It's a book by Wayne Dyer. Okay, anyway, one of his very early, much, much earlier ones before he was Wayne Dyer, as we know him or knew him. Because remember when his PBS specials used to be on all the time? Am I dating myself? Well, yeah, Fincher's 1974. Self-dated. Okay. His specials used to be on all the time. But The Family Crucible was basically a book. It was sort of a profile, or I can't remember the word for it. There was a particular word of a family that he treated. And I was fascinated by that. I was fascinated by the ways that the way one person shifts changes the entire system. I was fascinated how growth can be expressed in unacceptable and problematic ways, like healing. Yes. So here we are. We're going to talk a little about healing. So I started reading psychology books really young because I wanted to be, I wanted a happier family and I wanted a happier life than my parents have. And I didn't know how to go about doing that. And so I read a lot. And when I was 18, I actually took myself to me school. I mean, Dr. Laura Schlesinger and Camille Paglia and the guy who wrote everything I need to know I learned in kindergarten, and Don't Sweat the Small Stuff, and just so many books. I can't even remember them all. Those four I mentioned because those helped me to form my way, my process for thinking about relationships, people, and feelings. They formed the basis of that. Dr. Laura, she helped me. One of the big, because do not get me started, because, you know, do not get me wrong. I don't know if she's canceled or not, but I hope she is, because she's kind of horrible. But there was a time when she seemed less disturbed. She seemed like hard, like firm, but not mean. And over time, that really shifted. And for me, the book was, you know, 10 stupid things women do to mess up their lives. And one of the things that she said was stupid depression. This is not the case for everybody, but it was certainly a factor for me. Stupid depression, I think, referred to one of the things that she said was that sometimes women get depressed when they know that they need to handle some business that they're not choosing, that they're choosing to avoid. I most certainly do that. I will most certainly, not now, but back then, absolutely. I didn't want to deal with the thing. I wasn't ready to deal with the thing. I was scared to deal with the thing. You know, I would analyze it into paralysis and then be miserable. And so I learned how, there were just so ways of like being really honest with myself. That's what that did. Her and Camille Paglia, those are the two who, when it comes to like intellectual rigor, well, I won't say necessarily for Dr. Nora, but for Camille Paglia, when it comes to some intellectual rigor, I don't agree with her on, there are things I disagree with her on. There are many things I disagree with a lot of people, but I like her process. I appreciate the process that she showed me when I was reading her. Oh, Gavin De Becker, Gift of Fear. Another book that was formative to like my adult personhood. And then after that, it was a lot about just trying to grow, and be better, to try figuring out what I wanted and what kind of person the person I wanted would want, and what I wanted in life, not just like in a person, and what kind of life I want them to want. You know, all these things that I thought about and I worked toward and I worked on. And the missing piece was vulnerability for me. So not long before I met my friend, I came across Brené Brown's The Power of Vulnerability, and it changed my life again. And it was wonderful. It helped me so much, because I the way she talks about vulnerability is how I feel about vulnerability. It's like, really, there's just really got to be a better way. There must be a better, simpler, more reasonable way to do this than open up and here I am, everybody. Just no, thank you. I don't feel like cutting myself open for humans. Anyway. So I had thought that I'd learned vulnerability, but what I'd done was confuse the need. I'd confused helplessness, because of the way my disability track ran, it took a very long time. It took 7 years for my disability case to be finished, to be approved. And it took a lot of shenanigans. And I needed help with certain things. And I had to learn to ask for help. And I thought that that meant that I had learned to be vulnerable. But being forced to ask for help and choosing to let people see who you are two very different things, which I learned. And so one of the things that my friend did was help me walk through my stuff so that I could get to vulnerability. And for that, I will always appreciate her company. Even though, you know, she and I will never speak again, if I can help it. But I will always appreciate her company on that journey. I don't appreciate some of the BS that she kind of tried to add in, which became this like, she needed me to doubt myself. Sorry, I had some technical difficulties there. So I am recording this little insert to say sorry. And also, what I was basically saying was that, you know, in addition to being like really wonderful for that particular growth process, unfortunately, she also, for whatever reasons, needed me to doubt myself.
And she tended to be punishing when I was sick and had to be away. I would get a little punishment when I came back. And I just thought, so anyway, what I was going to say next is that after having taken one of those little breaks, having been sick for like 18 months, I'm going to tell you a little story about what happened next.
Year and a half, I come back to where everybody is hanging out in the place where I hang out. And I meet a guy. Now, usually at that place, at that point, I am not open to any kind of relationship type situation, because I was very much of the, you know, you have to get yourself together before you can be in a relationship place, you know, be strong first, blah, 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 blah. And I do believe that like that can be good and important and helpful if that's where you are genuinely. But I met this person who was unpass upable. They were the things on my list. They were my list. And I, although it was always going to be a long distance relationship, although it was never going to be, you know, the two of us getting together and we were in different countries, I was like, okay, I'm going to, you know, when I found out that there was some interest on his end, it's like, yay. And there were some, you know, complications at the time, but he's the person who taught me how to be in love, how to fall in love. That's what he taught me. He taught me how to fall in love. I did not know I could do it. I'm one of those people who I love people. I mean, like I have very narrow bandwidth for them, but I adore humanity. I love how messy and contradictory and beautiful and chaotic and all of the things that we are. I love it. And then in all of that, we still find a way to relate. We find ways to relate and connect to each other. It's just, I love humans. So humaning. And so, and sometimes I will meet a person and feel super connected to them right away. And those things I always honor. So just about everybody in my life is someone that I met and was like, okay, you are one of my people. And I'm keeping you. And I kind of assumed, because I would hear people talk about falling in love, and I love these people. I'm trying to think, imagine, like, what wouldn't I do for them? There's not a lot I wouldn't do for most of them. So I don't know the difference between that. And I'd been in a romantic relationship before where I absolutely could not say that I fell in love with the person. I loved him. I still love him, but I didn't fall in love with him. Been in a couple of those situations because I just never did that. I don't know what people were talking about. It was very confusing to me. What do you mean? And so he and I talked about that. We got together, we talked about it. Then the man stayed up all night after I had to have my kitten put to sleep. My 6-month-old kitten, whose sister was, I got home. I fully prepared to try to, you know, make the night whatever it needed to be. And I saw a message from him that said that he was waiting. He stayed up all night. It was like 5 a.m. his time when I called him. No, wait, it was later, because 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 1, 2, 3, 4. Yeah, it was 5 a.m. Yes, I used my fingers. It was 5 a.m. his time. And I fell for him like a rock, like a lemming off a cliff. I was gone. I had no idea that that's what it took for me, that that's what it was. It was that piece of, I will sacrifice for your, not even well-being, but just because I'm thinking about you. I wanna make sure that you're okay. And I never required or expect that from people. I do now in partners. But I never had. It's not something, it was never really relevant because, you know, our relationships are long distance. And I'm doing for me anyway. So what? So I fell for him and he taught me how to fall in love. And I entered my relationship with that person, my ex, the lady, not the one who taught me how to fall in love, as near to the woman I knew I wanted to be as I believed I could get in this lifetime without just like, I'm not talking about, you know, the natural growth that we do, but like all the work, like all the like hard slog that I'd been doing to become this person, to become the person that I always imagined myself to be and always felt inside of me, that was pretty much done. And I was coming into this relationship with my ex at like the best, healthiest I'd ever been in my entire life. And this person who I built had faith that this is who I needed to be in order to have the right partner and in order to be a good partner. And even once I gave up on the idea of like partnership for myself, because, you know, my life is my life. To be a good partner, even in like friendship, because I do see my friendships as partnerships too. Like I take them super seriously. I mean, I have a very small life. So yes, I do a lot of living for and through and with my friends. I you know, what can I say? So when I met this person, I was at the best I'd ever been. And that's how I felt about myself. And then the way that they left me was so excessively cruel over such a long period of time. I experienced it as cruelty. Here's what I know. I know they couldn't do anything other than what they did. I know that he loves me. I know that he loved me then. I know that he could not do more than he was doing. I do know that. What he was enduring at the time, I get it, right? Fair dues. But the effect on me was that if he had calculated the breakup to break me, he could not have done it more perfectly, because it did. It completely broke me. Not completely. And as it turned out, not completely, because completely happened a year and change later when he showed back up and then did the same thing. And something about that really tanked my self-confidence. It just tanked my view of myself. It made me feel like I created this situation, or I felt I'd come to start telling myself that I'd created this situation by becoming who I was, that I'd made a mistake about who I needed to be, that this woman that I thought was so great and that I was so proud of and so happy to be when we met, that was all wrong, and the work of my entire life was something that I needed to rethink. And man, you want to talk about playing the game of life with sweaty hands? Whoo! Slick, baby. I hate that word. It's a gross word. I don't like it. Especially when you pair it with baby, it's worse. Anyway, I was paralyzed by indecision and self-doubt and fear and confusion and all of these emotions that I just, and pain. It was pain, right? It was, this thing had hurt me so badly, I didn't even want to be me anymore. because it was being me that got me here. And I didn't even realize that that's what I had been doing until like 2 months, something like a couple of months ago. And suddenly, wow, the pace of like feeling better really raised. And I will tell you one of the first things that happened after I realized that, because one thing I've kind of learned about myself is my path bends towards joy. And once I've identified what is making me unhappy, watch out, because I will always choose me. I will always choose me. So in that moment, with that situation where I felt like I couldn't be myself anymore, and I realized what that was about, and it was almost within hours, I want to say, that I stopped hurting over him, that I stopped being heartbroken. It was the final step in the patching up of the heart, the healing of the heart. Healing really sucks. And I'm going to tell you why. Because the process is nasty, dirty, and ugly. The process is awful. And it doesn't look anything like progress. It doesn't look like progress. You're like, you're wallowing in all this forever, it feels like, right? And you can't see you from the outside. So you don't know, you can't see the growth that you're doing, or the progress that you're making, or the ways in which that you're showing up differently than you did before that maybe are better. You can't see that because you're inside of the emotional stew of it. And so I'm aware that, like, and when you're hurting so, so badly, pain reduction has to be a lot before you really start to notice, like, how you're actually doing. Because I went to a place where I was like, I don't have any more friends. Nobody loves me. Nobody wants me around. Nobody wants to hear from me. Nobody wants to talk to me. And it was hilarious because almost instantaneously, not even instantaneously. I mean, my first ex, the one I fell in love with, the one who taught me how to fall in love, he was there like from the get-go. Hours. He would hold me. He would let me cry. He would listen. I would over and over again. And one of the things he said about me that I did not know about myself, is that he says that you're strong in that you can handle anything as long as you can talk about it. And that is really true. I don't know if that's strength or not. I just know that if I can talk about it, I can usually process it. So I talked about it. Whew, I talked about it a lot. And so people in my life who had maybe been less in my life because I'd been a bit absorbed in the relationship, they just showed up. They just showed up. I thought that I had lost everybody. And what I had lost were two women that were like sisters to me. They were women that I thought I would know for the rest of my life. And that was really painful. And so it felt like losing everything. But it wasn't. There were also relationships that needed to change, that I had been unwilling to face, that they needed to change. And so instead, they broke. And I'm really good at managing that tension with romantic relationships, but less good at them at it with I should be more specific. I'm good at managing that tension in my relationships with men. I am less good at doing it with my relationships with women, because women are more complicated. You know, it's just, there's just always like a lot of extra stuff in there that you're both trying to navigate. So I did not like do the thing that I have done in the past in my relationships with guys, which is to just kind of change the shape of the relationship rather than end it. If I like the person and I care about the person. In this particular case, at least one of these people is someone that I really should be, you know, I'm well shut of. And so they are, you know, whatever, I guess they exist in the world somewhere. But the healing process, it's just really messy, right? So I went through this horrible time of like, not even hating myself, but thinking I shouldn't exist. Like thinking like everybody just was like, oh, she's talking again, make her shut up. And and the thing is that I know that there are people who feel that way about me, but I never really cared before. I didn't care. I'm going to say what I need to say. Those for whom it is relevant, helpful, enjoyable, they will pay attention. Those for whom it is an annoyance. Oh, easiest prank I ever played. Now I changed the shape of a relationship, which needed to be done. And apparently doing so was sort of like the last nail in the to my joy. Because I guess symbolically, like what I needed to do was to choose me. Because the thing is, we talk about relationships and we talk about ending them or staying in them. We talk about giving people a chance. We talk about, you know, someone not being a bad person. All of that stuff is irrelevant. Goodness, badness, not relevant. It is really the primary thing is, does being with this person force you to choose them over you? And by that, I am talking about your self-care, your emotional well-being, your sweetheart, I ain't talking about nothing but joy. I ain't talking about nothing but happiness. That is what I'm talking about when I talk about like choosing them over you. And that's all that has to happen for me to decide that a relationship doesn't work for me anymore. They don't have to do something awful. They don't have to be a bad person. They just have to be like the person that I can't be me. And I can't be joy. I can't find my joy when I'm with them. I can't find my joy. If you're in the way of my joy, you are in a dangerous place. And so that was like part of the healing. That was part of the healing for me, like part of the process of getting to good. And I will tell you, after that last piece, which was the, you know, shifting, changing the shape of a relationship, that into what it should have been all along, frankly. Because that was the other thing. It's like there were a lot of things that I reassessed. Like the reassessment process is also messy. You know, healing is super messy. So I get that it is a thing that takes time. I get that things aren't linear. It's very annoying that they're not, because it should be. But healing is so freaking messy. It's just not fun. Not fun at all. So like the reassessing thing, you know, the self-doubt thing, I felt like I had reasonably under control. And I had decided to reassess some things, limited number of things. And one of the things I was reassessing was the sense that I always have when getting into something with someone, of knowing what the thing should be, up to and including what is likely to break us up. So I decided this, this felt like a rebound to me. It felt like a rebound. It's like, this is a rebound. It felt like it. And it didn't, and I, instead of consulting, like my, I asked them like what they, what they thought. And they were like, no, not a rebound. And which is, you know, fine, but that's what it needed to be. That's what it was. That's what it really, that's what we, each of us, that's what I had the bandwidth for. That's what they had the bandwidth for. And that's what it, what I would have, what not, because I'm okay with the way things, you know, shook out. I mean, the way the thing shook out is fine. But I did realize that that thing, that sense that I have, that I know what the relationship needs to be, is not completely inaccurate. And that if I want to shift that, maybe what I need to do is like talk to the person about like, I don't know, my sense, I don't know. I'll think about that some more. So, you know, it's a time for reassessment. Still messy, right? Because you don't know pieces of yourself, decisions that you made about how to be, that suddenly you're shifting around. It's annoying. So anyway, so there's that part. And so heartbroken no more, locked into my joy here and there. Definitely have contentment. Okay. And I'm not going to say, I mean, I'm all healed up. You know, I've got like, I've got my little gold fillings, you know, in the cracks and things, but you know, we're still setting. So, and it's still, a little fragile. But I'm not going back. I am not going back because, heartbreak sucks. And being heartbroken over someone who treated you badly, it double sucks. So whatever I need to do. I'm happy. Happy is the direction. That's where this bus stops. Next. So the one thing I do kind of want to do, and I've kind of gone back and forth about this, a final message to my ex. Hey, jackass. No, I'm kidding. No, I'm kidding. We can call him jackass for the duration. Oh my gosh, I'm a jerk. Okay, so here's the thing. If you're worried about what you did or how I'm affected or what you broke, don't. I knew before we ever got involved that when it ended, that it would break me, because that's who you were in my life. You were unmissable. You were unpass-upable. And in some ways, you're un-get-overable as well. But I've done that. I've gotten over you. And I'm happy. And I am glad to have had, I don't regret a thing about our time together. I hope that you find you're happy as well. I hope that you, I don't think that we'll ever, I'm saying it, doing it this way because I think we've grown into people who can't know each other. And I don't want, and I want to remember you the way I knew you. And the way I, because the way I knew you, you were, we used to be giants, that Dermot Kennedy song. You are beautiful. You are beautiful. And I mean that in like just the most fundamental of ways. I've never known anyone who has your kind of strength. And I knew that, you know, to me, you strode the earth like a giant. And I don't mean that in a superhuman way. And I don't mean that in, like, you know, tough guy way. I mean that you were able and willing to be open and vulnerable and loving and kind and generous and strong and protective and funny and kind of a nightmare sometimes. And all of those things, in spite of everything that you are dealing with, and it never occurred to me that you are not going to win. It has still not occurred to me that you will not, be the winner in over your life, your circumstances, that you will find, you'll create a life that you love and that those who love you love living in. I still believe in you. And I wish you well. And I hope that you have all the happiness and joy in the world that you can hold. And I forgive you. I do forgive you. And I do know what happened. And it's really okay. It was a terrible time. None of us were okay. You are not okay. So here's what I'm saying. Go forth, be happy, be joyful. No need to look back. No need to worry. No need to feel ashamed. No need to feel guilty. No need to feel like you owe me anything. We are square. I hope for your happiness. But I gotta admit, I'm not that invested in it. Oh my gosh. Yeah, I mean, I'm sorry. So that was me doing my whole. I hope he's happy. I hope he's happy. I hope, you know, he achieves his happy place. But, you know, okay, if he doesn't, then I guess that's a choice too. So, like, all of that was true. All of it I meant. But I'm really too much enjoying this to really be interested in being stuck in all of that crap. Done. I love having healed. Healing is a pain. There's a lot of itching and you can't get to the part that itches because your cast is on and all of those things. And it's just very annoying. But having healed, like when you get to the place where you not only can see healed from where you are, but where you can almost touch it. That is a beautiful feeling. And so I wish you all happiness and paths toward happiness, paths that bend toward happiness and joy, because, you know, super important, super helpful. And I wish you all like a love like I had. I wish you all to find yourselves in a situation where you feel safer than you've ever felt, more loved than you've ever felt, more connected, more appreciated, more appreciative than you've ever felt. Those are good situations to be in. And I've had two, so I've been blessed. So I don't imagine I'll have another. Kind of tired. Well, no, I don't know. I like happiness and, you know, more love. Happiness is love. Love and happiness, they kind of go together, right? They have a link to each other. So anyway, everybody have a great night. Have a great day. Have a great month until you hear from me next, possibly. I am going to be uploading the karaoke's for January and February. There isn't very much for March, I'm afraid. I'm not sure if I have anything that's good. Please do subscribe. I am over on the Anchor platform is where I'll post this. I have not quit Spotify. I mean, I did quit Spotify and then I reinstated my account because there was this indie artist that I wanted to listen. Kind of hate corporations. So anyway, do please subscribe, comment, reach out to me on social media. I have Twitter. What else? Oh, like, subscribe. I don't know. I don't like this part. We've never done this before. I'm not sure that I want to. We'll see if I keep doing it. Okay. Streaming consciousness out.